paper out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly. For your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and co-manager, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, co-manager.
And our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward, has sadly been fired from the show after he accused Edwin and I of fraud and told our sisters to go eat dog food. No, just kidding. He'll be back next week. Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we'll be talking about The Meeting from season 6, which is another super fan episode on Peacock. And then for the conference room, we'll be doing a blind ranking. Edwin has one for me this week, so I'm excited about that. How the turntables. Before we get into that, Edwin, do we have any housekeeping?
Alex is not here, so no. But you can check out Captive Audience, our sister podcast, our new podcast endeavor beginning this year. We just released this week our episode about The Big Lebowski. So you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you check that out. But I think we should talk about The Meeting and why we're talking about The Meeting this week.
Yes, definitely. Well, first of all, The Meeting... I had it in front of me. One second.
Well, while you bring that up, I can just say that listeners of this podcast will know that Alex last week in housekeeping talked about how he's able to travel and able to record remotely. Because I think some of our listeners have picked up on the fact that Alex is on the road quite a bit. It delights me to know that he's not unable to make this recording. It delights me almost as much as a couple weeks ago when he mistakenly said that Colorado is the Florida of Central America. So these two things in recent weeks have just made me incredibly happy.
It's been a good month for Edwin.
Little victories.
The Meeting is season 6, episode 2. It was directed by Randall Einhorn, the director of photography of the show for most of it, and written by Aaron Schur. Of course, Aaron Schur, no relation to Mike Schur. Aaron has written The Baby Shower, 2 Weeks, The Meeting, The Chump, Woof.com, and Jury Duty.
Nice.
It aired on September 24th, 2009. Edwin, why are we talking about The Meeting this week?
Well, we had a great question from one of our Patreon subscribers for our Patreon mailbag that released earlier this week. Hannah posed this question about The Meeting and asked if Toby ever got to see the steam engine that Dwight claimed to have in his his run-of-the-mill slaughterhouse. It prompted a good question about this episode and whether or not it's worth doing an extended cut recap. We decided that it was. Hannah and Jemima for pointing out some of the funny details from this episode, why it might be worthy of an extended cut deep dive. So we're going to jump into it for this week. I was actually really excited to get after it after thinking about this episode a little bit more and after rewatching the extended cut. I know that this means 3 weeks in a row of us talking about single episodes and the main feed episodes, or main feed episodes of our podcast. But I hope you'll indulge us as we dive into this one, because I am very excited to talk about what it means. Because on rewatching, I think this episode really could have been a different turning point or had a different feel if they had kept some of these cut scenes in.
Yeah, I was going to say that I didn't notice too many new cut scenes, now I'm curious. Why do you think? Yeah, what felt different about it to you?
Sure. Well, we'll go through the different beats and moments from this episode. But basically, I think what is really different is this episode is The Office kind of grappling with the fact that corporate closed the Buffalo branch in Company Picnic in the previous season. It kind of deals with the fact that Jim has ambitions outside of Dunder Mifflin, or excuse me, not outside of Dunder Mifflin. He has ambitions for his family and maybe for his career that wants to take him different places at this point in his life. And they alluded to it a little bit. I mean, it's kind of an offhand line, but they talk about him having another job offer. So I guess the question is, you know, this episode could have been a bigger turning point. I mean, would Jim ever consider leaving Dunder Mifflin for a better opportunity for his family? What is there something to be said about this new, the addition of the Buffalo clients? Because they never talk about it really after the co-manager thing happens. The actual sort of pressures of being in the office and potentially getting downsized that we see in the early seasons kind of goes away as the later seasons go on. Dunder Mifflin gets absorbed by Sabre. And then kind of in the seasons that follow, outside of, you know, Harry Giannarone talking about Robert running the company into the ground, and, you know, the Andy coming in at the last minute, like the pressures of the corporate world or their corporate reality don't really come to bear a lot in the later seasons of The Office. So this is one of the last moments, especially as Dunder Mifflin, where it seems like there's a little bit of extra pressure, more workload. And what does that actually mean?
Yeah.
Like as a sitcom, it might not matter that much in the later seasons because people are just watching for the jokes, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really like that. It's, you're absolutely right. The threat of downsizing is the conflict in many, many episodes. And this is kind of the opposite of that. They're a bit overworked. And taking on more. I like, you know, seeing everybody kind of stressed out in the beginning and I almost wish that we got to see a little bit more of that. This episode is also like so funny. That's another what with the cheese cart and and it's just a classic episode of Michael, you know, screwing things up for himself and everyone else.
I guess as another sort of reason to dive into this episode, Jemima on the Patreon, our listener or our subscriber mentioned, it's a top five Office episode. So, I do think this is a strong Office episode. And by the end of our discussion, I will ask you, if you think this is top five material, because that is a big claim.
Okay. It is. Well, the cold open for this episode is very, very simple. It's Michael is going in for a colonoscopy and is asking Oscar for advice. I love to see people just like just the way that Oscar just hangs his head and walks out is very funny.
And it's funny because Oscar shows some genuine concern. He's like, yeah, what's going on? I'm sure it'll all be okay.
That is good. But beyond that, yeah. Anyways, we get David Wallace is coming into the office. Well, okay. After the intro, you know, it's explained that, the Buffalo branch is closed. The Dunder Mifflin Scranton branch is taking on more work. And Michael had to come in on the weekend because he left his cell phone there. And then we get David Wallace showing up.
It's funny. Showing the office at work a little bit. Erin coming in with all the Post-it notes and Michael saying that if she keeps coming in with work, he's going to have to get another monitor because his monitor seems to just be a receptacle for Post-it notes, which he then turns to David Wallace and says, read it and weep. It's just like a show of how much work he has. It's very funny to watch Michael actually having to deal with some of these things in real life. And then Ryan coming in and asking an actual business question, whether the Buffalo clients go into existing or new.
Yeah, that's right. Seeing Ryan doing actual work. Mm-hmm. Post shoe bitch.
I guess too. You know, there is an element of Dave, like of Michael, of them acknowledging that there is a lot of work, David Wallace offering help. So it kind of acknowledges the situation in a way that in this extended cut on Peacock that we don't get in the main or the inline version, whatever you want to call it. Non-superfan.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Let's start with this main storyline. The David Wallace coming in, the yep. discussion of making Jim co-manager pretty much. So David calls Jim into the conference room so that they can sit down and discuss something that Michael doesn't know anything about. And I think, you know, we don't really know anything about until after the fact.
And we should acknowledge, really quickly, the thing that they're talking about isn't them being co-managers. That's where it ends up. But what it is right. Jim becoming manager and then Michael getting promoted to head of Northeast sales.
That's right.
So that's right. the thing Which that Michael is so afraid of.
Well, would he? I wonder if that would have meant that Michael would have stayed in the office if he became head of Northeast sales.
Maybe, yeah, because it seems like something he could have done from Scranton, maybe, but we don't know.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess what I wanted to talk about really is like. You know, sometimes we talk about David Wallace being a bad CFO, and I think this is a good example episode of that. The way that this is handled by him is like really weird. You know, having like the Jim makes the decision to not include Michael, but David might, you know, be like, no, we should talk to Michael about this for sure. I don't know. And then of course that like David Wallace accepts the, Toby's performance review right. of Jim. And like, he would know that he'd be like, Michael, I know that you don't like Toby. And this doesn't really seem like that bad of a performance review.
I guess, I mean, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here. I guess like, mm-hmm. Does David know what this is before Jim presents it to him?
Oh, okay.
And then,
yeah, sure.
You know, Michael proactively seems to show him the stuff in the file. I guess, you know, it's funny because David Wallace, on one hand, yeah, maybe he should know because he already endorses Jim. He likes Jim so much that maybe he's even never seen this stuff or because remember when Charles in the previous season says that Dwight's been more of my guy and he says Jim's been a disappointment.
Right, that's true.
You
that's
know,
true.
I wonder if those words like have any sort of lingering meaning for David Wallace, you know. I find that mm-hmm. extraordinarily mm-hmm. surprising. really? But yeah, I mean, I agree that they're probably, I mean, David Wallace is, for someone who seems to be this elevated figure they all look up to, right? Meredith says your wife's mm-hmm. a very lucky woman. You know, he does seem to kind of just be led by all, the most recent thing he hears from Jim, from Michael, yeah. You know, so yeah, it is kind of funny in that way.
I will say like, it's nice to see him get, you know, give Michael like, you know, he's like, hey, just say the word, you know, if you're okay yeah. with losing Jim, we'll find someone else. Like, you know, you know, we know that David really values Michael. It's funny that this is all happening, you know, after the Michael Scott Paper Company debacle. But it seems like he really, you know, is trusting of Michael in this case. And maybe it's because of that, I guess, you know, he's like, I'm going to listen to this guy from now on.
I like that they acknowledge that the Buffalo branch closing and them absorbing it has become a factor. And I like mm-hmm. that in this extended cut, Jim says that he needs a promotion because he wants, you know, he says, I don't need a big house, but I do need my kid to eat. So I like that there's like an acknowledgement of ambition or that Jim is going to do something, that he's not just going to, at this point, we aren't in Sabre. So it's not like they have unlimited commission. Jim might yeah. realize that, you know, and even later in the episode, he says to Jim, Michael, how many times have I asked you to put me up for a branch manager position? And Michael says, I don't want to lose you, Pam, and I don't want to lose
Now babe. I don't want to lose.
but it was true. If you're Jim and you really want to make this happen, how do you do it? You go out and you get another offer, and maybe you try to make another move because Michael clearly isn't putting you up. So you maybe you rely on this connection yeah. you have with David Wallace, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the right move. But of course, this is – just ripe for comedy. Michael wanting to know about the secret meeting. Yeah. He goes to Pam and tries to get it out of her. I love that he's like, what do you think they're talking about in there? you wished him good luck before he walked in. He's like, he's trying to kind of manipulate her into telling him.
I love what he says. Like, if I ever lied to you, she says, yeah. He goes, well, I don't want you to. He doesn't have any other move than just to say it.
Yeah. I just don't want you to.
Yeah. we get some extended, I mean, that's true. Like, as Jim says, Michael can do just as much damage in the dark. And Michael, in an added talking head, talks about, isn't it the best when you hope your two friends become friends with each other and then they become best friends without you? And so we do get to see more of Michael conniving his way in with the cheese cart with Andy, which I really like. Because that's just one of the sillier props, one of the sillier ruses, I guess, in the show. So we get to see more of them building the cheese cart. We get to see Andy discussing his time apprenticing for a fromager.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, is the Grey Poupon line an additional?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, wait, what if I get caught inside of the cart? What should I say? And then they think about it for a minute. And Andy goes, oh, say, pardon me, do you have any Grey Poupon? And he's like, yes, I will say the Grey Poupon line.
Now I almost want to get caught.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny in Michael's mind that, like, he can have the perfect line for these kinds of emergency scenarios, but, like, only if, like, the exact circumstances come up. For example, when in the shareholder meeting, when he's going to have that line about being Zamboni, we're on thin ice.
Call me Zamboni.
That only works in, like, the most specific scenario.
Yeah.
But I never really noticed this moment before, but you can see Andy taking the cheese off of someone's sandwich in the back while they're making the cart.
I have noticed that before.
And we get the payoff in this episode that it's Kevin. Kevin, there's just an added scene of Kevin taking something out of the fridge and saying, yummy, to himself. And then noticing there's no cheese on his sandwich.
Yeah, and then, of course, the payoff, and then Andy actually delivering that cheese cart into the conference room is, I would say, a classic scene. I mean, I think this is one of the arguments for this being a top five episode. Andy really goes for it in selling this cheese cart.
Going south of the border to Illinois.
Which has formed a nice rind on it, which you will find both challenging and delicious.
I appreciate that David Wallace chuckles at the cheese cart, because very rarely do characters in the show acknowledge how ridiculous things are as they're happening around them. So I appreciate that. Like, why on earth would they need a cheese cart made of basically sort of lunchroom cheese that they find in the break room, you know, slices of American and like Cheese Whiz and the grated Parmesan. Like, how are you even supposed to eat these things? You know, because I don't believe, do they even give them like crackers or any sort of thing to eat the cheese with?
Well, they're just the goldfish.
Oh, the goldfish. That's true. And
if I may be so bold,
I actually think my favorite part of Andy wheeling the cheese cart in is Stanley. What have we here? Hello.
Man, that's all they needed to get Stanley enthusiastic about work.
It's so funny to watch him turn around and see the cart and be like, hello, what have we here? Kevin gets after it too and is reprimanded by Andy, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that Andy's apparently come in right at the end of this meeting, so they do not partake in the cheese cart. And the way that Michael exits the cheese cart is another classic moment from this.
You know, one thing about this episode is that there are a ton of season six bloopers that come from this episode. And in one of them, Michael exits the cheese cart and sort of spins into David Wallace and Andy Buckley breaks. It's a very good blooper from this episode. There are a few from this episode. And it's very funny because a lot of the moments that are blooped, let's say, are moments that are in the Superfan cut but didn't get in the original episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess let's take it back to this storyline, though. I mean, you know, what we end up getting is Jim dismayed because David tells him this thing, and then he confronts Michael about it. And then all of a sudden, Michael is, you know, Michael feels bad, I guess. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of funny, like, that Michael feels this way to protect himself and then suddenly feels guilty about never putting Jim up as a manager. And then we get this last call with David Wallace where, you know, they pitch the co-manager thing. And we also get the Foley from Michael getting Jim to come in through the door.
Yes, that is... Yeah. That's one of the moments that I think Hannah
right.
mentioned. yeah, I like to see. I also really like to see Michael, like, he knows he's done wrong, and Jim is just like, you know, like a disappointed father here or something. He's just he's like, I had a meeting that went very well with David Wallace, and then he talked to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder, too, like, because, you know, in this episode, there's this acknowledgement that Jim wants to make more money. In the episode that airs, it is never really clearly stated how much Jim gets in addition to this title and responsibility.
Mm.
And, you know, presumably there is
$80,000 a year.
Yeah. And then very good, very comedically humorous, Sean. But then you know, I think one thing that's interesting too is that, like, there isn't this acknowledgement that this arrangement is temporary in any sort of way. It becomes temporary because the office gets they go bankrupt, they get bought by Saber in season 6, but
yeah.
I don't know what the exit strategy is for the co-manager idea. Or maybe it's just another sign that David Wallace and the senior management don't really know what they're doing, you know?
This is, yeah, to continue my point of, like, is David Wallace actually a good CFO? It's just like, I don't understand why
I don't understand why you sleeping at your desk is better than you not being here.
I mean, Michael should know better than to, you know, he just takes Michael's word for it, walks out the door and calls Alan and says, nope, forget it. That idea is not going to work. And then Michael and Jim call him again. Michael says that, changes what he was saying earlier and is like, Jim should get that promotion, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, David Wallace, like, now has to be like, oh, it's just a co-manager thing. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any logical sense here.
It makes it for a convenient comedic scenario that they have to navigate for a few more episodes, but it mm-hmm. doesn't logistically seem to make a lot of sense. What does the day to day versus the big picture actually mean to this office? And granted, we're investing a lot of, we're imposing a lot of realism on this sitcom that we love, but, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. It does, and of course it doesn't matter, but it is just like, you know, the structure of head of Northeast sales and a regular manager of the branch is, you know, like an existing structure. And it's just like, why are you, you know, reinventing the wheel with the co-manager thing? Because I mean,
like,
here's the thing. I could totally imagine David calling Alan and being like, Alan, well, Michael Scott called me again and now says that he is into the idea. So I think that we should actually go forward with it. You know, I mean, like, we both know Michael. Remember Michael from the shareholders meeting? Yeah. But he's a very good manager, and I think he'd be fabulous for head of Northeast sales. Like, you know.
It's funny. I wish that they would have engaged with Michael. So a lot of the comedic tension that comes out of this arrangement is Dwight's master plan, Jim and Michael butting heads, Ryan letting everyone know in the office that Jim can't actually fire anyone. That's kind of how mm-hmm. it plays out until they go bankrupt.
Right.
And, you know, they get sold. But I would have loved to have seen them play with Michael in this sort of hybrid regional corporate role, where there are, like, it would have been fun to watch Dwight try to enact his master plan while Michael is away in New York, trying to come up with some initiative that to roll out to the other branches. Like, it would have been fun to see Michael in sort of a half regional manager, half corporate role. I think that could have been a fun thing for them to explore.
That would, you know what, dude, that would have been so fun. Cause like, I mean, it is funny when he's at the shareholders meeting and to see him like in the room with the big wigs making a fool of himself. I think that would have been a fun new angle for the show.
Kind of like Lecture Circuit, but with a little more authority, and like they have to actually give Michael a little more respect. Like the way that Karen is like, I'll just distill this in an email. Michael will come up with corporate initiatives, like the golden ticket idea. Like imagine Michael having to travel the different branches and roll out the golden ticket idea.
Yeah.
Things like that.
And you know, it still could have been temporary because Dunder Mifflin is still going to get bought by Saber. Saber's still going to have no cap on sales commissions. And Jim would be tempted to become a salesman again. And maybe he runs into Michael at like a conference or something like that, or at a, you know, a corporate or something. And he's like, man, you know, look at you. You're going to be manager for longer than I was or something. He's like, actually... thinking about, you know, or maybe it's that when corporate is, I don't know what, maybe when like people at the corporate level are getting fired because Saber is buying Dunder Mifflin, Michael would be like, can I come back or something? I don't know. I do want to add that. Yeah. Hannah actually, on our Patreon, wrote, also, why didn't David Wallace, the frickin' CFO, bring Michael in sooner? I work in HR and I'm having to suspend some disbelief that they wouldn't have brought this idea to Michael, the manager, first, before the meeting could even occur.
Well, the only reason thing that I would say to that after having rewatched this a couple times is that it was Jim's idea and that they brought it, Jim brought it to David and then David brought it to Michael. Is that not correct?
That's correct. But I would do,
or do you mean like the co-manager thing?
I think that Hannah's kind of saying like if like he knew what it was about, but I think also I could imagine a moment where David's going, you know what, Jim, hold on one second, let's bring Michael in here.
Yeah,
like I think we, the three of us, need to talk about this together.
Sure.
And does Michael know about this? Oh my god. Well, before we talk any further, let's make sure that Michael knows about the, like, you know what,
that's,
I mean,
true. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, let's move on. So then, of course, they announce. Well, maybe before we get to the climax, the ending here, the reveal, the bullpen announcement. We should go back to the other storyline that's happening during this episode, which is that Daryl has fallen and broken his ankle, and Dwight is suspicious.
This is a very funny storyline just because it's a pairing of two people that have some kind of weird synergy but never get together, which is Dwight and Toby.
Yeah.
It's very funny to watch. I mean, Dwight being accusative like this is pretty normal, but to see Toby want to go along for the ride is pretty funny. I love when he says, what have you ever seen Daryl in a race to do anything besides come up for birthday cake? Y'all having birthday cake? And then Toby says, that's not a very good Daryl. It always makes me laugh because it is, it's a terrible Daryl impression.
you know what's really funny too is that this is a pinnacle episode for Toby. This is, could have been a turning point. He could have been cool after this. Daryl gives him they pound and he's
calls
like
T-Man.
Thanks T-Man. Yeah, and but it is his love of detective stories that ruins
astray.
It for him. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, punch you into mush. See?
Yeah. Like, I do love that. So with the extended cut, we get a little bit more investigation. We also get a little more Dwight and Toby in the car together. There is one scene that there is one thing that I'm glad that they cut for the main episode, which is Dwight saying that, is it noticeable or is it worthwhile that only the security cameras don't cover this one part? And Toby says this for the keep the three hole punch. It's kind of misleading because I think what he's saying, I think Dwight is trying to allude that that's where the accident happened, but it doesn't make sense with them wanting to check security cameras at the end. Sorry.
I thought what he was saying was like that Daryl said where it happened. Mm-hmm. And Dwight's like, like, you know, Daryl picked the one spot for this to happen where there's no footage of it.
So that would be, that would make sense. Except at the end, when they're talking about what to do, Dwight's like, we should just check the security camera footage. And Toby's like, well, I guess if we really want to be sure, you know?
Well, the footage would show Daryl climbing over the railing and getting into the lift.
Okay. I think I understand.
It's an airtight mystery story, for sure. don't you dare come for it.
I think, you know, instead of imposing realism on the corporate structure, we should impose realism on the on the mystery of the broken ankle or whatever.
I love to see the creep of Toby slowly is like, yeah, Dwight's making some good points, and it's just like it's Toby speaking over all this, like, you know, Dwight is acting out the accident and, like, you know, looking at the ladder and looking at the top shelf, and, you know, it's like Rainn Wilson. Anytime Dwight is, you know, being this physical, mm-hmm. is always a lot of fun.
I really appreciated the extra scenes from the stakeout that we got, which is Toby chastising Dwight for using these camouflage binoculars, and he's saying, like, if deer can't see them, how can Daryl? He's like, well, the deer don't know what they are.
He's like, the camouflage. Then, he's like, I can see.
There's also that scene where Dwight this happens in the other stakeout where he's like, here, replenish your fluids. He's like, do you want some water?
Yeah.
He says, yes. And he pulls out this weird emergency packet that we see some in that season 8 episode where Dwight is eating all the food from his emergency storage. And, like, to see Toby drink for that little water, like, they both drink out of this weird water packet in this, like, kind of gross slurping way. And then turns out it's not water. It's water gel.
It's water gel.
Yeah. What did I drink?
Toby's like, why would you drink that?
It's thicker than water. You know, it reminds me, I don't know when this scene happens it could be that it's in an extended cut, and maybe one of our listeners can tell me where it is if it's there. But there's a scene that I've heard them talk about, like, in commentary or in interviews, where, like, it was something that happened in the writer's room that they brought into the office. It's just, like, a really awkward thing to watch, which is, like, I think it was Paul Lieberstein, or I think Toby does it in the office scene, but it's, like, him trying to close a banana after you've eaten half of it. Like, that awkward thing where you kind of, like, close the rest of the peel around the banana and put it on a table or something. And watching Toby drink the water gel feels like that in real life. Like, it just doesn't seem to work. There's, like, something very awkward about it. Yeah.
This is, of course, also where we get them connecting over their love of trains. Mm-hmm. They hear a train and Dwight knows what it is. And Toby's like, you're into trains? Do you think that Toby ever got to see the old steam engine that he's rebuilding in his slaughterhouse?
No, I kind of think that this was, I think that this didn't end well. This doesn't, the way that this ends does not bode well for Dwight and Toby's budding friendship.
Yes.
That would be my opinion. Yeah.
I think the end of this episode, you know, throws water gel on whatever fire was starting to burn there.
I mean, it's a run of the mill slaughterhouse. I don't know why Toby even wanted to see it, but yeah, anytime. Yeah, I hope so, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this could have been Toby loses out twice. He could have been friends with Daryl. Could have been friends with Dwight.
I would like to mention that you know, that scene where Toby says, hey, asshole, they drive off. The bag of dog food that Daryl's sister has, I just noticed it in this rewatch. It just says purest dog kibble on the bag. It's like such a classic prop bag.
Yeah, for sure.
And we only
Oh, I was going to say, that's like when we make a prop in film or TV, you have to clear the name. You have to kind of like, you know, send ideas for names that you have to like a lawyer or to a clearance company. And there are definitely cases where you're just kind of like, I don't really want to clear a name. We don't have time. Like, we shouldn't spend the money on it. Like, let's just, can it just say Purist dog food? Like, it's right. Not a brand. Like, it's just it just says what it is. Like, can we get away with that?
That happens a lot in TV and film, I find. Yeah. And it's only, I mean, most of the time, it's something that's so micro that you wouldn't notice it unless you're rewatching it like we are in this exercise.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things that I've noticed is there's a prop beer. I've seen it in a few sitcoms, most notably in Happy Endings, which I know we both like. There's a beer called Brazo, which translates to just arm in Spanish. But maybe it's supposed to be like hug, but anyway, it looks like a Modelo can, but it just says Brazo on the side.
Totally.
We find out that Daryl's sister's name is Gwyneth because he says, "Come on, Gwyneth," and then she says, "Sad."
Toby really. This is how many times does Toby yell in the office? This time, yeah. Does anyone have a camera?
No one has a camera here.
But yeah, I also noticed too, you know, Toby kind of like gets smacks his head on the dashboard or something like that. Or,
yeah. Hey, man, are you okay?
Yeah. Go, go, go. And, but like they actually do give him like a red mark, like for the rest of the episode. the way too that Daryl and Gwyneth come after Dwight and Toby in the office is great. I guess they follow them all the way back to the office and into the annex.
It's true that Toby only yells a few times. It kind of makes me think of Jim and how he doesn't really yell, but he exclaims.
Yeah.
Hey, the car is over here. Yeah. That was stakeout day. Perfect end to a perfect day. Imperfect end to an imperfect day. Yeah. But yeah, I guess maybe to wrap it up. So yes, they, they both file complaints against each other. So Toby has to do all the paperwork. And it's very funny because the storyline serves the purpose of extracting Dwight from the office while all this co-manager conversation is going on. Because it's the only way that he would maybe not be involved and not have some sort of stake or maybe be helping Michael with some sort of espionage. Because afterwards, when he comes back and he says fraud was committed and then they announce the co-manager thing, it makes everything that Dwight was doing seem so small by comparison.
Yes, yes. And he realizes that too. That he was distracted by this and should have been focused on what was happening upstairs.
You couldn't handle my full attention.
Let's take a we take a quick break and then we'll be right back to finish talking about the meeting.
What say we do?
All right, let's talk about Every Plate. If you're looking to budget your food expenses in the new year, you can save big and eat great with America's Best Value Meal Kit. Their meals are cheaper than your average fast casual meal, so ditch the takeout to save money while still enjoying fresh, satisfying meals. They're the easiest way to eat affordably. Put the money you save towards making 2024 plans or a vacation or a trip, like me. Apparently, I'm constantly on trips on vacation, so they say. I get that money by saving money on my meal kits. Plus, you know, my wife works nights. It's up to me to make dinner a lot. It is really nice to be able to go to the fridge and have a meal ready to go, that tastes good, that looks good. She comes home impressed I made dinner, and it was easy. In 2024, you can count on Every Plate to make mealtimes easier without compromising on quality. Every Plate recipes include only the highest quality ingredients, including sustainably sourced seafood that meets the Monterey Bay Aquarium seafood rankings. Folks, I've been to that aquarium before. It's extremely cool, so whatever they say goes, because they know what they're doing. And make the sustainable choice as well. Every Plate offsets 100% of their delivery emissions, and their meals have a 31% lower carbon footprint on average than supermarket meals in the same portion. Plus, nearly all packaging materials are curbside recyclable in most areas in the U.S. So get started with Every Plate for just $1.49 per meal, plus $1 steaks for life. by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering 49Scott. Subscription must be active to qualify and redeem $1 stake. Again, that is everyplate.com/podcast and enter the code 49Scott.
Welcome back to the Michael Scott Podcast Company. The third storyline in this episode, of course, is Pam inviting people to Jim and her wedding. Michael, they have their wedding in Niagara Falls in order to discourage people from accepting the invitation. I mean, obviously, everyone in the Scranton branch is very close, and therefore, you know, they feel the pressure to invite everyone. However, Michael spoils this plan by giving everyone the weekend off, a 3-day weekend, I think, if they go to the wedding.
Yeah, what we get is it's Pam sort of chasing down everyone for their RSVPs. And as far as the extended cut goes, we get a little more space with these moments. It's not really like a full C storyline, but it does lead to some pretty funny interactions. And yeah, they have to decide if they want to work or have a 3-day weekend. and I really love some of these little extra things we get. I think a lot of the extended, I mean, we talked about what some of these extended cut moments mean for the corporate reality, right? Or the business reality, let's say, of Dunder Mifflin. But some of these extended moments are just really funny, even, but like they don't add a lot to the plot development. It's just kind of Phyllis holding in a sneeze or being unable to sneeze. but I do really love when she walks out into the bullpen and just says, "Who's going to Jim and Pam's wedding?"
And like, and there's some just kind of like, raise their
yeah. Some people just kind of turn. Yeah.
And then she's like, yeah, I'll get back to you.
I love those little moments where it's like the rest of the office, to use Dwight's parlance, doesn't find Jim adorable, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's always kind of funny when you get those moments.
By the way, Scranton to Niagara Falls, 4.5-hour drive. It's kind of almost like the perfect distance to, like, you know, it's like, well, that's a little, okay. Like, that's travel. Yeah.
If you were in the office, would you have gone to Jim and Pam's wedding, or would you have worked?
I'm a fan of weddings. I would definitely go.
Yeah, I think almost I would have
don't. I almost don't understand these people who don't want to go to a wedding for someone that they've known for years.
If you're invited to a wedding, yes.
Yeah,
especially.
It's a little rude. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's actually very rude, I think.
It's extremely rude. That is the joke.
I love, too, that when Pam also is like, thank you. I've been trying to get people to come up to me all day. Pam, my bag was there.
Pam. Yeah.
We also get
another missed connection for Pam and Angela.
Very true. Very true. Angela, you seem so happy. I bet you wish you were like this all the time. We also get a little space between Pam and Kelly, which I thought was really funny.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, because, you know, in the main cut, Kelly says, you know, I don't want to go if Ryan doesn't go because it's kind of a waste of time. That came out wrong.
Yeah.
She says, I'd really like to be there for Jim. And in this extended cut, she says, because it's kind of the most important day of his life.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, everyone is just being extremely rude to Pam. And she's really taking it on the chin, man. Like,
you know, it's funny. Meredith says she'll just take whatever's fanciest unless there's ribs, and she'll text you the day of the wedding. Meredith at least is being very upfront.
Yeah.
She's being authentic.
Yeah, she'll be there. Yeah.
Hells yeah.
Oh man, that could be another argument for this being a top 5 episode. It's just Meredith saying hell's yeah.
Niagara Falls, hell's yeah.
See, and another reason why we love Meredith Palmer. She wants to go to the wedding.
Okay, I'm going to pose this another question to you. What do you take? Whatever's fanciest or ribs? Niagara Falls,
whatever's whatever's fanciest, because I, as a bearded man, ribs, especially at an event where, you know, I'm wearing my nicer clothes, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah. Out of context, and I say this as a non-bearded man, out of context, I think I would probably prefer ribs over whatever's fanciest, but in context, at an event, you want to, it's a messy, messy food.
You don't want to be gnawing on a bone. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to be wearing the ribs afterwards. So
yes, yes. who else does she talk to? I think that's kind of,
well, the last tag is an ad as well. In the regular episode, the tag is Dwight yelling, expressing his frustration. In the extended cut, the tag is Pam running after Gwyneth going, "Daryl!"
Oh, yes, yeah.
And then when she runs by Gwyneth, she looks and realizes it's not Daryl. Then she keeps running and goes, "Daryl!" as if he's up further away.
I do love to, like, when they're both in the annex and Dwight is like, "Because you look exactly alike." And he's just, looks into the camera and is like, "Are you not seeing this?" I like the added, they actually don't need to be wearing the exact same thing either.
Yeah.
It is great that they're both wearing a big green jersey. And I also want to add too that Gwyneth is just hanging out on the couch in the warehouse. All right, high five. We showed those guys who's boss. Let's go sit in the warehouse.
So I think that covers most of the storylines and most of the additions from the deleted scenes. One thing that I always I've been enjoying this more and more as I've been digging through or binging through the season 7 extended cuts, but it just kind of makes me appreciate the editing, not just to reduce or to cut scenes that maybe are, they have to get down to a runtime for network TV or whatever, but they're able to shave off things that seem super imperceptible, even though there's extra dialogue there. We didn't talk about this, but in the cold open, there's an additional line where Michael says, "Do I need a safe word?" And Oscar says, "Yeah," as he turns and walks out of the room. But in the extra cut, it's just Oscar getting up and walking out of the room saying, "Yeah."
Right.
You know? So yeah. It makes me appreciate editing for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, and then just how difficult it is to put these things back into the episode so seamlessly. I would love to, interview somebody who works on these super fan episodes. I'd love to know more about how they make them.
Absolutely.
And how much work goes into it. Cause I think a lot of work goes into it.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
It's a kind of, at this point it's like a public service too. They're just putting them out.
It's fan service at the very least.
Fan service. Yeah.
Well, so here's something that is not serious and a total waste of time. Have you heard Pete Holmes's bit where he talks about the phrase "edited it"?
No, I don't think so, but that
he's
is
like
funny.
That would be the saddest the thing that someone, it's not something that you can yell, if someone he's like, the wife divorces the husband because he never edited their wedding video, and he's like, "Diane, I edited it
I edited it." it kind of reminds me of Little Italy.
Yeah. Or Little Italy. Do you think Frank did it, edited it?
Frank,
but there you go. I guess, and then let's pose this to I'll pose this to you as well. I'm asking you a lot of questions here. Is this a top 5 episodes? There are a lot of ingredients I think that lend it to being very, very strong.
I think it definitely meets some of the criteria that I would have, which is, it's a pretty Michael-centric episode. It all takes place in the office. I like that we get a little bit of warehouse. It has some uniqueness as well. Dwight and Toby pairing up together. Love to see David Wallace in an episode. I mean, I'm just saying, I think Man. I mean, I want to, yeah, I think it, man, I guess I'm trying to think of my other top five episodes.
That's the thing is we have to make a top five a la Bill Simmons pyramid of basketball players. Like you need to have a definitive ranking to kind of know if this could slot in somewhere.
If it's top because, five. Okay.
My top five. I mean, yeah.
My top five are like murder, the injury, I mean, I like your guys' favorite episodes, which are I think the Dundies and Money,
yeah.
Are really, really, really great episodes. So
that's the thing. Like the meeting, does it crack that echelon?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If it does for you, dear listener, then I understand. I don't mean to cut you off here. I would say it is probably not top five for me personally, but I would give it top five most underrated. Because I do think like this is maybe an incredibly underrated episode because the blend of sort of the business reality a little bit, like this existential stuff does kind of lend to stronger episodes usually, like what's going to happen with Jim to, you know, in their family or whatever. The silliness, the Dwight Toby pairing, the Pam engaging with everyone in this sort of very funny way. Kevin looking for his cheese. I think all those things are really, really good. So I'll give it top five most underrated.
I 100% would agree with that. I mean, I think like the Jim co-manager arc is like, underrated itself, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but like it just how we say sometimes like, you know, the whole Florida arc almost feels like a dream, like the co-manager mm-hmm. kind of thing kind of feels like a dream. All of a sudden an office appears. Within the office that wasn't there before. Yeah. We never saw Nate putting up walls. I don't know if Nate's in the show at this point. I don't think he is. but it's I forget about the co-manager arc, and I get, you know, this is kind of the catalyst for all that. So
mm-hmm. I mean, we might have to do, this might be a fun exercise for future conference room, but pyramids, like top five, top 10, top 25 or whatever.
What is the pyramid? Explain to me the power of the pyramid.
I'm taking this from Bill Simmons. The sports guy. He's been doing sports writing, podcasting, The Ringer, 30 for 30, like ESPN, Grantland. There are all these things that he's done, but sports culture writing. I mean, I think right now the best way to reference him is The Ringer. So the website where there's long form written context, but there's like a big, very big podcast network as well. And he also wrote this book, The Book of Basketball, where he like talks a lot about basketball, but there's this pyramid of greatest players kind of thing. So that's why I'm talking about the power of the pyramid. So, you know, the different tiers of greatness, let's say.
Okay.
So maybe that's one that we're going to need to go through is, maybe we could do it in a draft format or something, but
yeah, do a power of the pyramid episode.
Yeah. But another pyramid for another podcast, I think.
Also worth mentioning at the end here, the cheese cart scene, Michael pretending Jim is walking into his office and doing all the sound effects. Jemima pointed out a few lines. Again with the cousin. We didn't even talk about this. When Michael is again wondering, what's going on in the conference room, he's sitting on Andy's desk and he's looking in there and he's like, how's it going? How are your sales? Andy immediately just goes, how are my sales? Busted. He just caves immediately. He's like, and then he's like, you're not buying it.
I'm in this flirty nebulous thing with my cousin. It's the Phyllis line is so funny.
Yeah, she doesn't even look up. She's like, again with the cousin. And again, just like so weird, like what, like first cousin, what's going on here? What are you talking about? Like, Andy, why are you sharing this with people?
Everyone in their club has heard about it and moved on.
Yeah. I don't know. You tell me. Hey, Andy, let's go see grandma this weekend and get drunk together. Ha ha. Weird.
I'm glad you mentioned it again with
this. Yeah, she also pointed out y'all having birthday cake and and well, yeah, you tell the mayor he just lost 6 votes.
Which is, yeah, of course.
Michael's fake phone call.
All right, I love you too. This episode is also the source of many of our greetings and goodbyes from our voicemails, and
yes,
David Wallace be like, ah, being pulled over for talking on my cell phone. And then some of the ones you just mentioned from Michael going in and out with his phone.
Yeah. And then lastly, too, Hannah mentioned one of her favorite moments is Pam going up to Kelly. And Kelly just goes, oh, so jealous of your boobs. And then just a pause. And Pam goes, thank you. Great, great episode. Thank you to Hannah and Jemima for just motivating us to do an episode about it.
You don't tempt us with a good idea. We will do it.
Let's head to the conference room to finish this up.
All right. Let's conference room it up.
Welcome to the conference room where we will once again be doing blind rankings. I know that we've been doing blind rankings a little bit in the last few weeks. It's been a very fun addition to the show. Mm-hmm. And I think for this week, the difference is that I will be posing Sean these questions. In many of our other episodes, Sean is the trivia master. Sean has been giving us some blind rankings. Last week, Alex gave me some.
I really feel like you deserve the title. You deserve the title of trivia master. I just read the questions. But yes.
Well, hey, and sometimes you let the calls go to voicemail. I established this in the last episode, but I have dubbed myself Rank Sinatra, and I have dubbed you Rank Did It. Okay, I'm glad. It's very funny. We talked about it the likelihood that you would not have listened to our last episode is very strong. So I'm glad I got to let you hear about that in person.
Yes. Okay. I still need to listen to last week's episode.
Okay. So I'm going to give you back to back blind rankings, and then at the end, okay, I will give you kind of a theme.
Okay.
But okay, so number one is peach iced tea.
Oh, okay. So I don't even know what the theme is. I'm just ranking. I'm just blind. I'm completely blind ranking here.
Yeah.
Peach iced tea?
Mm-hmm. Blind guy McRanky. Yeah.
I guess, man, I don't think I would like a peach iced tea. Really? But let's go with, like, I don't think it's bad. Maybe I'll go 4. We'll go 4th.
Limo lady.
Oh, well, I mean, limo lady is an advocate for environmentalism and, you know, she's strong, to stand up and, speak truth to power. So, you know, she's a hero in my mind. I will give limo lady, first place.
Number one. Okay. Pam's speech at beach games.
Yes. This is listeners of the show know that I'm not too fond of this speech. You know, I like to see, you know, I like to see Pam stand up for herself and say, you know, little Pammy's getting what she wants and don't call me Pammy. But it just felt like a leap and a little corny. I'm going to give it 5th place.
5th place. Okay. The next one we have is I Can't Wait.
Yes. My favorite Charles Minor quote. Man, yeah, that's He's, it's, you know, Charles Minor, not a very enthusiastic guy. He's a bit monotone. It's great to see him come out of his shell. You know, for something so fun as playing soccer in the parking lot in the middle of the workday. So I'm going to give it second place.
All right, number two. And the last one we have here, this is your de facto number three, is Nana.
Nana, yes. Michael's Nana from the Michael Scott Paper Company up ARC, who, you know, she is a, seems like a very, very smart, you know, business oriented woman. It's unfortunate that Michael didn't spend more time with his Nana as a child. He might be smarter and better off for it. But man, yeah, she's a bit she's a tough lady. But yeah, I guess number three. She's
okay.
Nana's
so
sweeter than peach iced tea.
In the first round of rankings, you have Lima Lady number one, I Can't Wait number two, Nana number three, Peach Iced Tea number four, and Pam's Beach of Beach Games number five. Did you switch any of those around knowing what you know now?
I don't think so. I don't think so. My top two, I really like those. Between okay. Nana, Peach Iced Tea, and Pam's Speech, they're kind of maybe like all equally. They're kind of all equally like a meh on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are interchangeable, perhaps in the bottom three.
Okay. Okay. Now we'll go to the second round. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the first one in the second round, we're going to go with Meredith.
Meredith Palmer.
Mm-hmm. Supplier relations. I mean, the Marinator sleeping with suppliers.
I mean, they broke the mold with Meredith Palmer. She is a single mother, you know, has a PhD, loves to party. I think Meredith it would be one of the more fun people to know in real life from the show. I'm tempted to give her the number one spot right out the
okay.
gate. Blind.
Meredith, number one, coming out hot. I like it. Okay, the next one is going to be tomato, bologna, and ketchup.
That is going to be definitely number five, tomato, bologna, and ketchup. I would say mostly for the ketchup of the three ingredients. Second to the bologna and third to the tomato. But yeah, that sounds nasty and I don't want that.
Someone ate 3 feet of that thing?
God.
Yeah.
God.
Okay, so that's one. And number five, murder.
Murder the episode, not mm-hmm. murder the crime.
Correct.
Murder the
not
episode. Murder, my favorite episode of The Office. Well, it'll have to go to second place, right behind Meredith. Perhaps,
okay.
Perhaps my favorite character.
Okay. The next one, okay, that comes in at number two. The next one is, what do you say, Jim? Want to play some soccer?
Another great Charles Minor quote. I would definitely have to give, for the same reasons that I gave I Can't Wait number two, I'll give this number three.
Okay.
As it is the highest remaining spot.
And the last one, your de facto now number four, is Cafe Disco.
Yeah, that is okay with me. I think, again, here, the bottom two, probably interchangeable. But I could watch Cafe Disco, and I could not eat a tomato bologna ketchup sandwich. So
okay,
I think that is perfect.
Okay, so in the second round of blind rankings, you have Meredith number one, murder number two. What do you say, Jim? You want to play some soccer? Number three, peach. Cafe Disco number four, and tomato bologna and ketchup number five.
Yeah, that's solid.
Okay, do you know what the theme is for these two blind rankings that I've given you? And would you want to rearrange any of those, the second five?
No, I don't think so. Okay. No, I like it.
You played it very well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. These all feel related to me in one way or another. Limo lady, I quote, a limousine. I can't wait. Nana. It's technically this. It's not Nana, but another woman who is in the business club at the retirement home who says we could give him a chance. It's not that much money. The peach iced tea is. I don't know how that relates to me exactly. Actually, it's not the thing that Michael's like. You're gonna hate it.
It is.
It is. Okay. Okay, yeah.
The theme is Sean's favorite and least favorite things. And I spread it out over two rankings because I just had too much fun coming up with the list.
This is great.
And I threw in peach iced tea to be like, you're going to hate it. beginning.
Perfect.
That's the clue. I couldn't be too mean though, because I was like, maybe no. I can trick you and get you to put Cafe Disco number one. but I decided not to. I was curious how obvious it was that everything was about you during the process.
Definitely. Yeah. Pam's speech, I've said before, I didn't like. Meredith, I think you know that I love Meredith. I think we all love Meredith.
Yeah.
And Murder, my favorite episode. What do you say, Jim? Want to play some soccer? Another great. And then Cafe Disco, probably my least favorite episode. And yes, tomato bologna ketchup makes me gag just thinking about it.
It's their worst sandwich. But yeah, I thought it'd be very fun to come up. I know that people have sent them in, so I apologize for not drawing off of those. But I wanted to give Sean a bespoke blind ranking experience.
Heck yeah. Yeah, that was great. Thank you very much. Yeah, and again, we're very excited about doing more blind rankings in the future. So if you have one that you'd like to send to us, email us at mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can also call us and leave us a message, 503-694-9314. Check out our mspcstore.com. Join our Discord to hang out with some other fans of the show. And you can join our Patreon, patreon.com/Michael Scott. For $5 a month, you can be a Scott's Tot. You can get a bonus mailbag episode every month where we answer every question we get on Patreon. You can get ad-free main feed episodes. You can get some other bonus material as well. And a portion of those funds go to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. So very special thanks to our Scott's Tots for supporting us. Special thanks to Kayla and Brianna, who run our Discord. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who designs our artwork. This episode was recorded on location in Portland, Oregon, USA, and Zurich, Switzerland.
Well, I just want to say, please also check out Captive Audience, our new companion podcast about TV and film. Please rate and review this show. Please rate and review that show. If you like it, helps us, helps people find the show. Just want to say again, we're excited to have Alex back for our next show. I know that the last 3 weeks we've done episodes about single episodes of The Office and then also some blind rankings in the conference room. So I'll be shaking it up for the next episode. Alex will be back coming Christmas 2002. So stay tuned for that. But more important than any of that, we just appreciate everyone listening, hanging out with us. I guess one last housekeeping thing before I say another thank you. You can get the Discord link to join us on Discord in our Instagram bio in the show notes. Come chat with us on Discord. We love interacting with everyone there. It's absolutely amazing. But leave us an email, send us an email, leave us a voicemail. But thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us, for supporting the show, for sending in questions, comments, quotes, blind rankings, voicemails, everything that everyone does. I am so proud and happy of this little community we built around our show. And interacting with everyone is the real joy of doing it. So thanks for being with us on the journey as we approach 5 years of doing this podcast. Just a sincere thanks for everyone who has listened or supported along the way.
Take
care. Stay
much.
Safe. We'll see you next week.
I felt like I was holding in a sneeze there.
It was going to be a doozy.
Pippity poppity, give me the zoppity.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Good night. Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.